And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Welcome to the Dave Cave Batman Podcast. I am your host, J. David Weeder. But here in my lair, deep beneath stately Dave Manor, you can call me Dave. And yeah, the show is back. It was over, now it's not. Long story short, I changed my mind. I'm going to continue with the show for the foreseeable future. And for those that might be coming back to the show or forgot the show, this is the podcast where I chart the Dark Knight's career from year one all the way through No Man's Land, based on my reading project that lays out the saga in a very, very loose chronology. And for those experienced cave dwellers who have been here before, you know I like to get right down to business. So we're jumping back to the beginning of another Batman family member, Catwoman. Now, I might regret doing this episode, but hey, it was on the list. This time we're looking at yet another alternate version of her origins in Catwoman, annual number 2. This is the ongoing series, as you might have guessed, from July 1995, which features a cover by Jim Ballant. We have Catwoman standing in the foreground wearing the gray version of her costume from the Catwoman Mindy Newell miniseries, pulling on one of her opera gloves with ninjas and cats surrounding her, and in the background among the ninjas is a martial arts master from every 70s martial arts film and a man in a garish dog mask. Beyond the proportion issues that come with Jim Ballant drawing a female character, you know the ones I'm talking about, the foreground image of Catwoman is, it's fine, it's decent, and I like that she's pulling on a glove as if for the first time. That's a good bit of symbolism. But the background is a train wreck. It's all kinds of messy. Ninjas are doing human pyramid stuff. The cats look possessed. The ninja master is so cliche, all I have to do is point out he's a ninja master. Look, you perfectly pictured him, without even trying. And then there's the man in the dog mask. He's the main reason I'm even covering this issue, because he's going to be relevant at some point down the road. Not super relevant, but relevant enough. And I think, really, we're going with the evil opposite doppelganger thing here. I mean, yes, I get that she's an ongoing character now with her own book, but really? We're going to do the Knight Rider car thing? Well, run with it. If it's there, it's there. Go all in on it. The story inside is entitled Catwoman Year One, written by Jordan B. Gorfinkel, penciled by Jim Ballant, inked by James Hodgkins, lettered by Albert Tobias de Guzman, and colored by Buzz Setzer, which may be the best comic book name next to Moose Bowman. And to go right to the synopsis, we jump back to a time slightly before Batman Year One takes place, and we find Selina leaping out of a window with loot in hand and a gunshot wound for her trouble. Selina falls several stories into the water and manages to climb ashore to avoid the police divers who are looking for what they assume would be a dead body. Selina is too weak to move when two hunters find her and take her to the city, delivering her to a den of the women of the night. In case you're wondering, yes, I mean prostitutes. The women cut Selina's hair into a crew cut, and Selina wakes up to the modern day, now a lady of the night herself, and entertains a client who likes whips. While her customer sleeps, Selina peruses some of his paperwork. Inside, she finds the schematics for the Galler Gallery, which is harder to say than you think, which is Selina's bread and butter. She can't resist. But on her escape from the art gallery, Selina's attacked by a ninja, who knocks her out, but not without a fight, and takes a totem that she was trying to steal. And since Selina trails the ninja and finds herself in a warehouse slash martial arts temple surrounded by a bunch of ninjas, Selina's in trouble when the master ends the fighting. The master demands to know who Selina is from the ninja that attacked her. That would be Kai, and Selina tells the master she wants what is rightfully hers, knowledge. The master agrees to let Selina stay and train, which royally ticks off Kai because she is a female and Selina makes an enemy for life right then and there. Selina takes to her martial arts training, managing to defeat Kai in sparring matches and ticking him off even more to the point he plots to kill her. Some time passes and we revisit the day Batman was cornered in the building from year one, and Selina tendering her resignation to Stan with a punch to the face. Inspired by the Batman, Selina finds high-tech material and fashions herself a cat costume to emulate the psychological aspect of the Dark Knight. Selina resumes her cat burglar career, slipping away from the cops and training in the martial arts at the same time, and a year passes as Selina becomes the lead student of the dojo. As Selina works a heist at an upscale party, she meets with Kai again, this time decked out in a dog-themed costume with a ton of impractical blades on it. I mean, just saying. He makes Shredder look like an underachiever. The two do battle, which ends with Selina clawing Kai's face and escaping unharmed, but without the score she came for. Her sensei greets her on a rooftop and tells her goodbye as he senses that she is leaving the fold. He hands her a crystal cat, just for luck. Before her sensei leaves, Catwoman asks how he can remain so humble with so much power in his hands, and her master sheds his robes. He reveals that his arms end at the shoulder, and he says it isn't difficult. With that, Selina leaps off into the night, wondering what Batman is up to. And the retconning of Catwoman's origin is now complete. Now, this and the last episode I did, which was August of last year, are the result of two things. One, Catwoman becoming the main character in an ongoing series, and Zero Hour, whose stated goal was to try to fix some of the anomalies in DC continuity that weren't fixed by the Crisis, or were directly caused by the Crisis. Zero Hour really ended up being an excuse here and there to just retcon things that people didn't like, to please the fans a little bit, or sometimes just to tick them off, but primarily to try to remove things that were controversial. Now, this particular issue took place further down the road from Zero Hour. It's actually set between 22 and 23 of the ongoing series, so Catwoman has long since shed her recurring villain status for being the star of her own comic book. And of course, that comes complete with villains, supporting cast, etc. The thing is, she is a fascinating character, but a hard one to build an ongoing series around. Robin, I would have thought so too, but seems like that was pretty effortless. Teenage kid trying to make it as a superhero? That'd never work as a book, but yet it did, right? And just to make sure that little joke isn't too far-fetched, I'm talking about Spider-Man. This also fits into the theme of the DC annuals that year. They were all year one. And I'll be covering a lot, if not all, of the Bat annuals, which cover the first year of the Rogues Gallery and Robin. This is easily, far and away, the weakest. While the other annuals have varying degrees of good, this one just became a headache-inducing nightmare. Like I said up front, I may regret doing this. Andrew Leyland and Michael Bailey tried to warn me by not covering it on their show, but here I am, learning my lesson in real time. So let's dive into the bits and bobbles of the issue. We start with a single splash page that feels like a gimmick. Here is this exciting splash for your 48-page annual, and then we go into a flashback within a flashback. It does fairly well at bridging the gap between Catwoman number 0 and this. They do seem, at least to some extent, tied together. One of the keys to that was Selina thinking, "You are what you have done," reminding us that in Selina's world, the stakes are high, fight or flight, sink or swim, which is pretty appropriate since she was thrown into the bay, stuck in a trash bag. That's always been Selina's life, clawing her way to survive. And the other half of that equation is Selina thinking to herself, hate is the lifeblood of the powerful. And so she hates back. Selina's whole identity is to reciprocate what she feels the 1% is doing, which is stepping on the little people. Not just stepping on them in a matter of course, you know, that this they happen to be where they're going, but going out of their way to step on them, venomously doing so. If that is true or untrue about the 1%, I don't know. I'm in the 99 with the rest of you. But it almost makes Selina a natural reaction to the callous upper class. For a good long time in Gotham, money has talked and talked very loudly. It's been a bunch of bribes, the rich get away with whatever they want, the poor stay poor, or maybe even get poorer. With the 1%, we immediately come to Bruce Wayne, who is definitely a member of that particular sector. Bruce is the exception to the rule, maybe the only exception, I don't know, in terms of Gotham. But he is an exception, a very clear exception, who thinks selflessly and puts himself on the line. The thing is, by outside appearances, Bruce is exactly like the people who are keeping other people down. He's the idle rich, making himself amused at the expense of the poor. Everything Batman is separated, at least from the perspective of the people around him. They don't see Bruce and Batman as one, except for Alfred. Which means Selina is lumping Bruce Wayne into the same camp as the people she's saying have a lifeblood of hate. And yet she ends up really falling for Batman, not knowing the two are the same. I mean, the irony is beautiful. And then this caper going wrong, Selina has to survive, and that's what she does. She jumps in the water, she survives. The police are literally trolling the bay for a dead body. And Selina's like, see ya, kind of. There is a dark spot here, and an unclear spot, in which we look at possible human trafficking, if the hunters are to be seen as taking her and delivering her for money. I've read and reread this a couple of times, and I'm still unclear on whether these are nice gentlemen helping her, taking her to a place she's already been, which I don't think it is, or if they see an opportunity where this hurt woman washes ashore, hey, let's sell her into human trafficking, which is a very real thing. It's not far-fetched to think this. Even if that isn't the actual case, it still evokes that thought process and gives a little bit of a chill. You know, that may be how Selina ended up in Stan's employment. Now, at the same time, I look closer and she's giving them money, so I think she is paying them to take her back, so who knows how she ended up there, but it still evokes that idea. And Selina blames herself. She ignored her instincts and went for the greedy, and now she's no longer independent. She's in a prison in and of itself. It's not a prison with bars, per se. That thought process makes us realize once again that Selena's not a thief because of the profit. I mean, the profit is a thing, it's how she survives, but more importantly, it's the actual empowerment that it gives her. For her, that empowerment is about shifting the power. One part it's revenge, yes. One part it's personal validation, but it's also a defiance of the system that left her for dead as an orphan, and it's almost like it gloats over her. And as soon as she switches over to simple greed, she betrays all of that, and this is the result. A bad no-win scenario, which would have ended her up in prison, or a coffin, or I don't know if I can say this correctly, but I would almost look at it as a lesser of a few evils there that she's under Stan's thumb. I only look at it as the lesser of the evils because we know she does escape it at one point. Thankfully, Stan gets next to no page time here. A, we've already seen him play out as the villain in the Mindy Newell miniseries. B, he's just not likable, but at the same time, I feel like that was kind of a wasted opportunity because we jump from kind of what we know of Selena directly into the ninja stuff. One of the only real compliments I can pay this is that Selena doesn't actually stop being a thief. Instead, she integrates it with her other profession, using that to make contacts, to use her customers, to get leads and direction for new heists. So she's still a thief, even though she's also a dominatrix. And that kind of rings a little bit truer than what we saw in year one, where she just suddenly decided to become a thief out of nowhere. I at least feel like the foundation is being shored up a little from Catwoman number zero to what we know of Selena going forward. But still, this is weak, weak sauce. And that's how we end up in the situation we do, is that Selena has a moment of weakness, where she has a moment of actual greed. She ignores her instincts, goes for the monetary gain, like Monterey Jack from Rescue Rangers smelling cheese. She just can't help herself and runs right into ninjas. So she runs into Kai, and of course that goes where it goes. And I'm sorry, ninjas in the 90s, in the comics, they were everywhere. In fact, Batman had a whole toy line of ninjas. Night Force ninjas, I kid you not. Look it up, it was from Kenner. And while there were some well-sculpted figures in that, it was still just ridiculous. Everything's going ninja style. If you want to string up some of the cliched tropes of the 90s, some of which are true, some of which aren't, you're going to be talking about certain formulas that were coming into the equation, like variant covers, unrealistic body types, ninjas. Those would be the trinity of 90s comics. That and big guns, pouches. I mean, those are the kind of the lesser two, but these are the main trinity. Everybody developed ninja skills. Even the X-Men had a full ninja line. Yes, look it up. Ninjas were moneymakers, which is why we're here with ninjas. As mentioned, Kai was one of the main reasons I decided to go ahead and cover this issue. The second being that I'd already paid money to put it in the equation, so I'm not going to waste that. Lesson learned there, money's not everything. And I've kind of talked about Catwoman being in an ongoing series where you have to have certain recurring villains, at least somebody who can draw attention, and you've got to have the doppelganger. At some point, every character has a doppelganger, or at least an equal opposite. We have Bizarro, Superman, Reverse Flash, Venom, and Kai is the opposing point of view from Catwoman, A, because he's a man, B, because he takes on the guise of a dog. And so that's how we end up with the villain Hellhound, which I'll touch on at some point down the road, I don't know how often. I won't say he becomes a big deal, but he does become a relevant villain for a while. And I get that Catwoman can't always fight Batman or a single member of the Bat family. That would get old real quick. That kind of thing is fine for a miniseries. It doesn't work for an ongoing that you want readers to come back to month after month after month. Likewise, you can't really do the heist of the month each and every month either. And when you have that doppelganger opposite, you have the idea of the hero overcoming the opposite, and really the strengths overcoming weaknesses. Because if you're going to be a doppelganger, there's going to be strengths in the weakness of the protagonist. Venom can override Spider-Man's spider sense. Bizarro is completely opposite to Superman. Reverse Flash, same kind of idea, at least psychologically. And Hellhound, well, he's just there. He's a man, he's a ninja, he hates Catwoman. Proceed. Hellhound represents a misogyny brought into the equation that Catwoman has to overcome to prove that, hey, I'm a woman and I'm capable. And of course, he takes the dog theme, which is on the nose a bit. I mean, literally, if you look at it, he actually has the dog nose on his mask. And while I'm making it pretty clear that I did not like the issue overall, it does have a few components that I do like. Selena demanding what is rightfully hers, knowledge, I dig that moment. That is an answer, however, that is completely out of character for Selena. And Selena herself even calls it out. There is a writing rule that you can do something ridiculous as long as you point out that it's ridiculous. Most of the time, it's worth it. It works. Here, not so much. It still feels out of place, and we need to be going to a direction that isn't this, because it's not natural. It feels out of place, out of character, and out of touch kind of with what's going on in the rest of the book. And there is a scene that gave me those Walmart eyes, and the fact that they roll back. The Ninja Master gives Selena the nickname Niko-san, Niko meaning cat in Japanese, Chan being a polite way of referring to a girl, or a cat woman, or cat girl. You get it? She's a cat woman. See what they did there? And we once again intersect with the third part of Batman Year One, Batman trapped in the building, we all remember this, and Selena notes that he is human. This is the connection, this isn't a thing, it's a man in a costume. And Selena sees the idea of anonymity, which she has been using since she botched that robbery, and then inverts it to become a character rather than a normal, identifiable thief. Kind of like the speech in Batman Begins where Bruce is talking about being a symbol. A symbol can't be killed, a symbol can't be corrupted, but a man, or in this case a woman, can be. To me, that's decent storytelling, that's fair, that's a good idea to give Selena direction, except that it was already done by Frank Miller, and we're just copying that again. And that's the thing, all the ninja stuff is superfluous to what's already come before, making this issue redundant. Yes, there are small moments, then there's moments like Catwoman coming into her final confrontation with Kai. And what does she do? She scars his face. Which is, of course, a blow to his male vanity, I get that, but it marks him, literally, for revenge. This is cliche textbook villainy, which has been done before and done better. Dr. Doom, Silver Age Lex Luthor. The hero plays into the origin of that villain. And yet, I would rather read a Dr. Doom or Silver Age Luthor story over what we're getting here. This is just amateurish, is what it is. And the thing is, the book actually started out with a really nice, subtle central thesis that Catwoman, the concept of Catwoman, is a reaction to what she perceives as unfair power, which is money or material or male dominance, and a reaction to the natural hate that would come from that prestige from both sides, that she grows from the disdain that the rich shows to the middle class. She opposes it, as she's not a part of the system overall, she is an anomaly, she is a ghost in the machine. That kind of extends to the idea that the haves and have-nots are a statement, and that kind of extends to that idea that the haves and have-nots are at a stalemate in Gotham City. And Selena, being that anomaly, decides to become a have by any means necessary. And throughout the entire issue, Selena is unfortunately reactive, basically destroying that thesis. Look, let me give you an idea, an image, if you will, about thesis. If you ever hear the song Undone, the Sweater Song by Weezer, the lyrics state, "If you want to destroy my sweater, pull this thread as I walk away." Rivers Cuomo wrote that about a professor who told him, "If your thesis sentence is weak, then your entire point's going to fall apart all the way as you keep going and going." The thing is, this thesis, this idea that's presented on the first few pages of this book is a strong one that could very well support an annual, a 48-page annual, maybe even an 80-page graphic novel. And it falls apart within a few pages. And what do we get? Martial arts training for Catwoman. Which really doesn't make sense. It's unnecessary. It's superfluous. It's just cliche. And it puts Selena in this terrible position from then on, where she's reactive in the entire issue, and her choices are dictated by being shot, by greed, by chance encounters with male characters like Kai, Batman, and the Sensei. And through that, it loses some of the complexity and moral ambiguity that Mindy Newell brought to the tale. And I know most people don't like the Mindy Newell miniseries. It was surprisingly good, in my opinion, and I thought that it deserved a good read-through that I did. All of that is taken and pureed and then spoon-fed to the reader. And this doesn't negate the character's prismatic qualities, it just causes a narrative paradox. Catwoman as a character remains interesting despite this story. The story itself is not interesting. It starts out with a really good thesis and then just decides to put it to the side and talk about something else. It's the equivalent of me saying, "I'm going to tell you why tacos are the best food on the planet," and then go on talking about Star Trek. Those concepts are not mutually exclusive in any way, shape, or form. I don't think this takes away from the ongoing series or Selena's character. It's just something that was unnecessary. Like, let's get this out on stands and let's throw ninjas into it. That'll sell. It just feels hollow and it's so by the numbers that it hurts. The ninjas here are an enemy but represents the opposite end of the protagonist. We get it. It's paint by numbers villainy. And there's no real surprises. It goes exactly as you expect it to, at least by the time you get past page 3. I think that conceptually, if you started with the first few pages, this could have been a very interesting idea. And I can actually pitch it that, you know, you see Selena being Catwoman and how she affects the 1% from their point of view, and not the criminals, not Falcone, but your average Gotham City 1%er. And they're all affected in different ways, and then Catwoman's kind of there in the background as a concept. And we see kind of the ideas of the disdain that she describes from the 1% contrasted against the reality that, you know, most rich people don't have that much disdain for the poor. They just overlook them. Maybe you have some of these characters learning lessons about each other, about the 99%, and you have Catwoman with her empowerment by incident, by stealing, by confrontation, making better people. At least in some cases, some people will go the other way. This is just a general pitch. I'm spitballing here, which is going to be a pain when I go to edit this. Long story short, I can make a better Catwoman annual than this ended up being. That's not even bragging. It's not hard. All you have to do is turn it into a think piece. Make that thesis sentence from the first few pages matter. Show us Catwoman's place in the major scheme of Gotham. But instead, this issue played it safe, and while it does sync up with Catwoman number 0, which I find to be a more interesting comic, the goal of creating a new origin for Catwoman just falls flat. They did retain at least some of the Defiant core, and we don't lose Selina to the answers to her past, but man, this entire thing could be skipped, and probably should have. That's my bad. But that's going to wrap up this episode. I'll be back shortly. Definitely not anything as big a gap as from August 2019 to March 2020. And in the next episode, we move from an episode focusing on a female villain to another female villain of Batman's Rogues Gallery. That is Poison Ivy, and yet another year one annual, Batman Shadow of the Bat annual number 3. And for those wondering why I slotted that into this point in the chronology, well, you just have to listen to the next episode and find out. Real quick, before I forget, I did want to let everybody know that I have put the show on Spotify. So if you prefer listening on Spotify, look up the Dave Cave Batman Podcast or look up J. David Weider and subscribe through there or listen there. Stream it, however. Just spend time with me. And until next time, everybody be safe and be good. The Dave Cave Batman Podcast is a J. David Weider production and is made for entertainment purposes only. Batman, Batgirl, Robin, and all related characters are copyright and trademarked DC Comics and DC Entertainment. No revenue is generated by the discussion of these topics. All music and sound clips are used for entertainment and illustrative purposes only, and no copyright infringement is intended. Thank you for listening to the Dave Cave Batman Podcast. I'm J. David Weider. I will talk to you next time.